Tuesday, May 29, 2007, we have one public hearing scheduled and a number of work sessions that were noticed. A number of those work sessions, however, will be rolled over to tomorrow's meetings. We're waiting for amendments or there are other scheduling considerations. Just to give you an indication in advance, Senate bills 347, 629, and 573 will be rolled over till tomorrow for sure. We'll start at the top of the agenda otherwise and work down and may roll over some of those work sessions on other bills as well. So I will begin by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1042A. Council Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1042A comes here from Senator Manus Anderson. The bill prohibits locating a casino in an incorporated city unless the city and adjacent city's electors approve. Exempt tribal casinos operated pursuant to Indian Gaming Regulatory Act and federal regulations declares an emergency effective upon passage. You have the A5 amendments in front of you, and basically what they do require that the governing body of each county in which the House district or any portion of the district is located, and that's where the casino would be, shall submit the question of setting the casino to the electors of the House district for approval.
Thank you, Council. We'll begin by inviting Senator Manus Anderson,
the
chief sponsor.
I don't have A5. No. I have A6 and A4.
Let's get copies.
We just got the literally the A4 right now.
We've got a number of witnesses signed up, so there will be time.
There's, you have the A5 in front of you. That was passed out.
A6 is. It's Tuesday.
A5 comes from Representative Manus Anderson. I know that.
Okay. So you'll be describing the A5 amendments?
The House District one.
The House District, yes. I'm sure the A5 House District, I'm just briefly looking at A4. The casino may not be sited on land and county unless the casino is approved by the electors of the county in which the casino will be located.
Thank
that
you.
Seems to be the difference. One is House electors, the other is the total county.
One is Senate District.
Thank you.
Senator, go ahead.
Thank you, Representative McPherson, Chair, and members of the committee. I'm delighted to be here, and so I'm very thankful for you that you've decided to hear this bill. It is an extremely important bill to my district, and I want to open up with an email that I got today. It said, Senator Manus Anderson, we don't agree on much. I'm a conservative Republican in favor of lower taxes and less government. I can't think of much we have in common, but I can't think of anything worse for East County than putting a casino in our backyard. What exactly can we do to make certain that this does not occur? That came today. It's a very controversial issue in my district, and it does have to do with casinos. It doesn't have to do with a Walmart. It doesn't have anything to do with building a Macy's, or it has to do with a casino. The Oregon Constitution prohibits private casinos from operating in Oregon. The casinos are limited to our tribes as an economic development tool, and it is big business. And I can understand why two developers have bought Multnomah County Kennel Club, because it is big business, and it will be a billion-dollar business for them. But with a casino comes other ramifications to a wonderful community. Senate Bill 1042, as is, prohibits siting a casino in an incorporated city unless the cities surrounding it, the city's electors, approve it. In this case, the voters of Fairview, Gresham, Troutdale, and Wood Village would be required to approve the siting of this casino. And you're going to hear a lot of opposition to this bill, but I am speaking for the residents of my district who want one more step, not prohibition, but one more step for the developers to take before siting a casino in our area. You will hear about home rule. Remember, this is putting a casino. Would you want a casino across the street, literally across the street from your upper middle class home? Would you, Fairview Village is located right across the street from the proposed site, and an elementary school and a middle school are just a few blocks away from the siting of this casino. You're going to hear opposition from the building trades, but this has to do about money and prevailing wage rates. It has nothing to do with the merits of whether a casino should be located in a nice middle-class community. The casino is going to offer convenience gambling. The casinos that we have in Oregon right now are resort destination gambling. People have to get into their cars and go somewhere. But when we start having a casino in our residential areas, in the metro area, we are going to have casino, we are going to have convenience gambling, and there will be an increase in gambling addiction, and therefore the state is going to end up having to support more of those who will be addicted to gambling. We've already passed many bills this session regarding certain controversial issues. You've heard about payday loans reaping profits, and we have curbed that. Casinos are going to offer us the same challenge, but we won't quite have the same control as we do over payday loan business. We have passed some significant legislation that interferes with local governments also. We are preventing building in the Metolius Basin. We are dividing the metro urban growth boundary area in Eugene and Springfield. So this piece of legislation is not much different than other very controversial pieces of legislation that have come before you. So I ask you, I want you to think about the quality of life in these beautiful communities in East Multnomah County. All we are asking is for a vote of the people to decide whether a casino should be located in the community. We are not preventing it. We just want to impose an additional requirement for the developers. The way the legislation is now is each locality, each city would vote, and if one of them did not approve of the siting of the casino, then it would be moot. The dash fives that you have are limiting the vote of the people to the House district, and that House district would be then just the upper northern part of Gresham, all of Wood Village, and all of Fairview. And I'm going to pause now, and I'll be here because you have a number of people to testify. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. But hold a moment. Representative Bottomici.
Thank you. Just a quick question. Thank you so much, Senator Monis Anderson, for being here. We have the dash fours, which are county, and dash six, which is the Senate district, and you said the dash five is the House district. Which version, do you support the bill or any of these amendments?
I actually support the bill as is, but if you want to limit it in size, that's why all of these amendments came before you. And I think Representative Lim proposed the countywide, and I forget what number that is. But you have to remember that Portland area votes very differently from East Multnomah County. And if we open this up to the county, then it would be the Portland area basically deciding whether the casino should be located in East Multnomah County.
Thank you, Senator.
Any further questions?
Just briefly, one of the concerns I have about limiting to a political elective district, House or Senate, is when we have, a few more years here, we redistrict. So that may all change anyway. And I just, mm-hmm. anyway. Thank you.
Senator, you mentioned Mayor Weatherby.
Yes.
Would it make sense to have him
present
next?
He probably should go next.
Let's do that.
Get the proponents out of the way first, because there's a number of opponents.
So, as Mayor Weatherby.
Thank you. Chair McPherson and members of the committee, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity for allowing us to attend today and to address this issue. For the record, I'm Mike Weatherby, Mayor of the City of Fairview. With me are Joseph Gall, our City Administrator, and Ken Johnson, our Chief of Police. We also have Paul Elsner from the well-known firm of Berry, Elsner, and Hammond. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 1042A. This bill provides an important and critical vote for the residents of any Oregon jurisdiction that may have a private casino proposed or within their community. I believe this bill is truly consistent with a long tradition within Oregon of local control over local land issues. I'm supportive of this bill as originally amended by the Senate. Cities that are adjacent to any city that has a proposed casino within their boundaries can also be significantly impacted by such a private casino. Although this proposed bill has a potential ramification statewide, I would like to use the proposed private casino at the former Multnomah County Club in Wood Village as an example, because that really is what we're talking about here today. As the committee chair and members may already know, there is a proposal from two Lake Oswego businessmen to develop a large entertainment complex that includes a casino at the former Kellen Club. These two potential statewide initiatives may be on the ballot in the fall of 2008 related to this proposal. If you look at map one of your information packet, you can clearly see the proposed casino site in Wood Village and its close proximity to the cities of Fairview and Gresham. The two buffers shown are 500 and 1,000 feet from the proposed casino. Although we do not have exact numbers, we believe that there are actually more Fairview residents within 1,000 feet of the proposed casino than in Wood Village. If you look at map two, you can see the two major transportation routes that serve this proposed casino from Interstate 84. Since we believe that the majority of the traffic coming from this casino would be coming from the Portland metropolitan area, existing transportation routes within the city of Fairview, such as Fairview Parkway and Halsey Street, would be significantly impacted by this proposed casino. We're saying that whether they come from Washington, the state of Washington, from down the valley, or from Portland, they're going to come out I-84, and the very first exit is on Fairview Parkway, and the closest way which people go is going to be down Halsey. So the problem with this is that we already have an interstate that goes through our city. We don't need another one. We don't want Halsey to either remain the same and just be clogged with congestion and thousands of additional cars that are going to be coming and going, or widening it to freeway enhancement. Fairview has been on record opposing further widening of Halsey Street. As a result, I'm here as a mayor of Fairview representing my people, my community, to state emphatically that I believe the opinions of my citizens should count as well in the decision-making process of approving the state's first proposed private casino. I would respectfully request that the committee consider approval of this bill with the amendment that takes into account the voices and concerns of mine and adjacent communities that would be impacted by a private casino. Some have voiced concerns that the proponents of this bill are aligned with special interests. As Fairview's mayor, I'm here to say that I'm guilty, since I am fighting to represent one specific special interest, my citizens. And I believe that they need to have a voice in this. You've also heard concerns raised about issues related to land use and home rule with this bill. I would state for the record that the proposed statewide initiative by the proponents of this casino are the real threat to land use and home rule. This proposed initiative would have the votes of people from Baker and Bend and Coos Bay and Pendleton, all good places, make decisions about our city, not the people who are directly affected. Senate Bill 1042A would, in fact, restore some balance to the equation by allowing those directly affected a voice in the process. Finally, I was notified this weekend by Bob Austin, who is the president of the League of Oregon Cities, that he's talked to his director, Mike McCauley, and also the other members of the board, and the league has reversed its earlier stand and is now taking a neutral stand on this issue. I think that you can get a flavor for exactly where we stand and how important it is to our community. I thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Weatherby. And why don't we hear from the rest of this panel and then ask questions.
I'll be very brief. Thank you. My name is Ken Johnson. I'm the police chief for the city of Fairview, and I'm here simply to express a concern regarding public safety. We're a small agency, 13 officers, a casino located in essence directly across the street. The city limits runs down the middle of 223rd, which is in front of the proposed casino site, will have a significant impact on our department. We're also concerned that even if the casino offered to fund, say, four police officers, it may take 18 months to 2 years to ramp up before we would be able to accommodate all those, specifically with the concern of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training's budget as it exists now, where they're talking about cutting back the number of academies allowed in a year and OSP increasing 100 police officers, City of Portland trying to increase. There'll be an extensive waiting list, and so it'll take us a considerable amount of time to ramp up, and in the meantime, we'd be dealing with some significant public safety concerns and some serious traffic issues. Thank you.
Actually, I have nothing. I'm just here for questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Are there questions from the committee for this panel? Representative Wisner.
Well, mine's real simple. Representative McPherson, I was just wondering, Mayor, what's your population in Fairview?
Pardon?
What's the population?
We're just about 10,000.
Thank you.
Representative Wisner.
Thank you. I have several questions.
Go ahead.
Good morning to all of you. Thank you, Mayor, for coming here this morning. Mayor, are you speaking today to us as an individual, or is this the City Council position?
The City Council hasn't taken a formal position.
Has the City of Troutdale or Gresham voted on this issue?
I'm not aware that either of them has voted formally. the Mayor of Troutdale. I'm sorry. They did have a discussion. I wasn't there to see if they had a vote. I shouldn't speak for them.
Okay. Mayor, are you for the basic bill, the dash 4, the dash 5, or the dash 6?
The original amended bill, as amended.
The original is amended.
Dash, I don't know which dash it is. The one that
passed in the Senate.
The one that passed in the Senate.
It'd be nice enough. Let's share which bill we're talking about, and I'd like to know what the senator's position, because I guess she's supporting now. There's a Senate, a House, a county, a city, adjacent cities.
Adjacent
cities. And it
makes
a big difference, because we're talking about a law for the state. Mm-hmm. Do you know that the distance between one city in my district and the other one's 45 miles? And you're talking about other districts in this state, that it's hundreds of miles mm-hmm. from one city to the next. This bill says right. We're going to have all those cities agree to this.
Now, this just be cities that are adjacent to. That one that's passed in the Senate. Not a House district or a Senate district. Shared boundaries, in other words. They actually have to be touching.
There is a nod coming from Senator Mona Sanderson, and let me just ask the question, maybe the technical person on the panel. Is that an interpretation that the committee can rely on, that it's to dash A version of the bill, that is adjacent means there's a common boundary touching?
Yes. That was certainly the intent of the amendment that we proposed in the Senate bill, that there would be shared boundaries. So
I assume, Mr. Chair, that's in council, that's dash 2, and then we're going to throw dash 4, 5, and 6 out.
The version that passed the Senate requires adjacent.
Mr. Mosick, that's correct. The only set of amendments that I know of are the A5, which come from Senator Mona Sanderson, and the A4, which come from, I believe.
Mr. Chair, there's a confusion on the part. When they said as amended, he meant as amended in the House. We had amended it in the House, and that's what he's
Senate.
Referring to. I mean, in the Senate, and that's what he's referring to.
So this panel is supporting the
the amended Senate bill.
And if I understood Senator Monis Anderson, she supports the version that came from the Senate as well, even though there are other versions that are being that she would support, and perhaps others would as well, which identify House or Senate districts.
And maybe since the senator's back, she can help and provide more wisdom than I have. If they refer this to the voters and it passes, if it passes, it says you can have private casinos, not just tribe casinos.
Are you talking about the statewide initiative?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Then could not be appropriate to bring this bill. Is this the egg and the chicken? I mean, we're passing something that's outlawed. It's unconstitutional.
According to opinions that I have here, basically it does say that the proposed legislation on its face is not unconstitutional, nor does it violate state land use laws. It just imposes an additional requirement on property owners that want to develop casinos. I was concerned about the very issue that you're addressing right now, and so we got some legal opinion on this. So this is preventative. And yes, it could be that the two initiatives would fail if at the statewide vote. But if it passes, then this would be in statute that would require that the localities, the city where it's located, and those cities that have a common boundary to where the casino is, doesn't include the unincorporated part, but the cities with a common boundary wouldn't also need to vote.
But follow up.
Go ahead.
To the mayor and to the senator, but we're still passing legislation. It's focused on a specific issue, but it's going to be statewide policy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any further questions from staff?
And thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we have Representative Lim in the room now. We'll go to him next, and then we're going to indicate there's somebody from the sheet metal workers who need to testify before 8:45. Representative Lim, yeah, we're going to get him first. Yeah, Representative Lim, and then we're going to go next to the...
Yes, Council, a question about Measure 37 here, too.
Representative Lim.
Good morning, Chair McPherson and members of the committee. And for the record, my name is John Lim, State Representative. And I'm sure you have the copy of the Dash 4, which is my amendment. The reason why I propose a Dash 4 amendment... because of the bill as it's written, A, engrossed the Senate Bill 1042, the definition in the page 1, line 20, definition city that adjacent to the boundaries of the city. When we are talking about the cities adjacent to the boundary of the city, that has to be included in Portland. And that's my definition of adjacent to the city. In that cases, not only four cities, but it should include Portland, which is five cities. And if we are balkanizing of this issue, that each city has a veto power on this issue, I think it's much better we vote on this issue the countywide, not just the each city the way as it is written. And in case if the constitutional change passes on this casino issue, then most affected areas are the Portland metropolitan area, especially Multnomah County. And we are leaving them out and decided by the only local four cities, I don't think it's a fair deal. So to me, it's balkanizing, it's not the best policy. I think it should have a statewide decision on this issue instead of just the four cities. Already I'm not going to talking about the how bad is the casinos, how good it is. That has been already discussed. Already in our state, more than 4% of the total population already are the gamblers deeply affected we will have a continual problem, and we do not know exactly what the social cost might be, even though we are claiming this will bring more jobs and more economic development, and there's good things for the cities. Actually, it is not. But I'm not going to talk about on the merit of this issue. Only I'm talking about is on this bill. I think a statewide election might be the best choice instead of each city's decision on this issue. Because according to the bill as it's written, 1042A, each small city has a veto power. If any of the cities does not pass by the majority, this one is not going to happen. So I think a countywide election might be a better choice. That is my testimony.
Very good. Any questions for Representative Lamb? Representative Krieger.
Not really a question, but you're talking about who should take part in making a decision at the local level. I'm wondering, with me 350 miles from Portland, as far as you can get, what's my dog in this fight as far as my people being represented? I mean, I realize as a state office holder, we have that authority, and we vote on things that are totally out of our, you know, out of our district. But this is one that you go down to Brookings, where I was Saturday, and they don't even know this bill exists or anything about it.
Well, the one thing I would urge the committee to think in terms is in statewide terms, and while the focus of the particular proposal has been on one property in Wood Village, under the terms of the bill as written, if the Constitution is amended to permit private casinos, then this would be the siting mechanism any place in the state. Representative Krieger.
It might be a way that our rural counties that lost their timber dollars would allow a county to have a casino. In Curry County, we make a lot of money on the coast.
Any questions for Representative Lim? Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, if you don't have questions, can I ask a question to you, if you don't mind?
Go ahead.
And how do you define the cities that are adjacent to the boundaries of the city in which the casino will be located? Do you believe Portland is included, according to this translation?
The question is, does Wood Village and City of Portland, do they have a common boundary? Do they touch? Senator Modest Anderson is shaking her head no.
Okay, but the way it's written, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to debate with you. Cities that are adjacent to the boundary.
Right, and Representative, I'm being shown a map here by Council, which I also have here, which shows the City of Gresham and the City of Fairview butting up against each other to the west of the City of Wood Village. And so it would appear to me that if adjacent means touching, there, the City of Portland would not be an adjacent city.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Representative. I'm going to call up a panel now that consists of Willie Myers, John Mollis, and Bill Pronovost. And we'll start with Mr. Myers.
Chair McPherson, is it okay if I start, John Mollis?
Yes.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair McPherson, members of the committee. My name is John Mollis. I'm the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbia Pacific Building and Construction Trades Council. Ours is an umbrella organization representing approximately 20,000 union construction workers in Northwest Oregon and Southwest Washington. And to my left is Lou Christian. He's a business agent for UA Local 290. They represent about 4,000 union plumbers, pipe fitters, and marine fitters in Oregon and Southwest Washington. And excuse me, to my right is Willie Myers, business agent for Sheet Metal Workers Local 16. They represent about 2,500 sheet metal workers in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Thanks for the opportunity to be here this morning. I'm here on behalf of our organization to testify in opposition to this bill and any of the amendments. Many others that will follow us will testify to the fundamental flaws in this proposal. But I'm going to stick to the positive issue or the positives that this project would bring to our membership, our signatory contractors, and to Main Street businesses. Our organization has signed a project labor agreement with the developers of this project that ensures that local contractors and local workers will build the project. The workers on the project will be provided with family wages, employer-paid health insurance for them, their spouses, and their dependents, pensions so they can retire with dignity after they have worked throughout their careers, and apprenticeship and training opportunities so that the workforce for the future will have opportunities to train and be and learn these skills for other projects further down the road. The wages that they earn and the taxes that they pay will stay in our community and be spent in local Main Street businesses. So I would respectfully request that you take no action on this bill. And once again, I would thank you very much for the opportunity to testify this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mullis. Let's hear from the others, and we can invite questions from the committee.
My name is William Myers. I'm a business rep for the Sheet Metal Workers Local 16. I'd like to just basically mirror what Mr. Mullis said and support what he said.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Myers.
Yes, thank you. Lou Christian, business agent with Plumbers and Steam Fitters Local 290. And this would create family wage jobs, and you heard wages. Also the training for the future craftsmen for our region. These jobs are very important to be able to keep these men and women that have made the choice to enter the construction trades and to become journeymen and continue their careers in the area. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions for this panel? Not seeing any. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Let's hear now from Mayor David Fuller and Mayor Paul Tolliver.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I would like to start with a possible correction to Mr. Mayor Weatherby's testimony. I talked to Mayor Austin, who is the president of the League of Oregon Cities, on Friday afternoon, and at that point, he still said that he was in agreement that this was bad land use legislation. So he did not tell me that they have changed their positions. And also, I just talked to Linda Ludwig to ask her if she knew something that was more current than that.
Excuse and me, Mayor, you, just as a formality, but you need to identify yourself for the record so we can identify whose voice is whom on the audio tape.
All right, I'm sorry. My name is David Fuller. I'm the mayor of Wood Village. Okay, so pardon me for that. But anyhow, apparently... Ms. Ludwig has not heard anything about the League of Oregon Cities reversing their position. For my testimony, there was an article in the Gresham Outlook in opposition to the casino on Saturday, and it had a lot of misrepresentations and inaccuracies. And so our council took that and over the holiday weekend put together a letter to the editor, which I believe you have copies now, and I would like to read that as my testimony. In response to the Outlook's editorial Saturday, May 26th, we would like to set the record straight. The issue Mayor Fuller is opposing is a violation of Home Rule, which states the legislation shall take no action that is in direct opposition to local control for land use planning. Mayor Fuller is accused of being the only major elected official who supports a casino in Wood Village. Mayor Fuller is not fighting for or against the casino, but rather a real and present danger to the right of self-determination for all cities through the precedent set by SB 1042 could have for any future conflict of land use arising between cities. The League of Oregon Cities was quick to recognize Mayor Fuller's concern and wrote a letter stating the League would strongly oppose the bill. We believe the voters will and should decide if a casino and entertainment center is appropriate for Multnomah kennel club site. This is the approach that has been taken by the two initiatives proposed for the fall of 2008, and the petitioners have a legal right to take this route. If the initiatives become ballot measures and obtain voter approval, Fairview and other cities can use the existing land use laws and procedures to protect any impact they believe their facility could have on their cities through the LUBA process. It should be noted that Fairview and Gresham successfully used this process several years ago to allow them to determine restrictions that gave Gresham Station advantages over the development of Wood Village Town Center. We are a long distance away from the Concedo being a problem. The two state initiatives must first obtain enough signatures of statewide voters to qualify for the 2008 ballot. The proponents must endure a long, hard political fight with the Indian Casino interest groups and a large number of other special interest groups who will oppose the initiatives. This is a normal and acceptable process for initiative ballot measures. It would seem the chances of success is marginal at best. Therefore, Wood Village City Council has not taken a position on the casino at this point and instead is waiting to see the outcome of the state election. We have, however, advised the individual proposing the casino that they must meet all state, county, and local zoning and design rules before their plan will be approved. Traffic, public safety, quality of life, environmental, social, economic impact studies must be completed and mitigated before the building permits would be issued. This includes impacts identified for neighboring cities. Further, permits would require completion of all proposed features of the entertainment center in accordance with a pre-agreed timeline, or the licensing for the casino would be pulled. The site in question for the proposed entertainment center has been a gaming site for 50 years and was popular enough to demand all of what is now Wood Village Town Center to accommodate the cars that ventured there nightly for the pari-mutuel gambling. The plan calls not only for a casino, but an entertainment center that will include as a minimum a water park, a 400-room hotel, and top quality 1,500-seat venue theater to bring name attractions to East County, movie theaters, three quality restaurants, and a bowling alley. Senator Anderson generated Senate Bill 1042 with apparent input from several individuals who have a special interest in stopping the development of the casino. Anderson initially stated that she was introducing this bill because of some residents from Wood Village. However, she failed to consult with any Wood Village elected officials or city staff members to determine the city's plan or to advise her intention to do so. She did, however, confide details to the Gresham Outlook and to the mayor of Fairview. Her original bill was for a vote of Wood Village residents. Apparently, this move to protect Wood Village wasn't a guarantee of success for her group of supporters, so she called and invited Mayor Weatherby of Fairview to come to the Senate hearing and make a friendly amendment to the bill, adding a requirement for Fairview to be allowed to vote on what happened in Wood Village. Before the hearing ended, Gresham and Troutdale were also added as cities who could vote on what happened in Wood Village. This is a clear violation of the Oregon Constitution's right of home rule for chartered cities. Troutdale's Mayor Tolliver was asked to join Fairview in supporting this bill during Senate hearing. He declined but was willing to put the question to his city council. The question was added to the council agenda for May 8th. Senator Anderson, Mayor Weatherby, a representative of the Warm Spring Indians, and Mayor Fuller all testified at this public hearing. The conclusion of the discussion was that five Troutdale councilors agreed with Mayor Fuller's position that the bill violated home rule. Two councilors voiced opposition to casinos in general. The last thing we need is legislation that would establish precedents that undermine home rule and put in jeopardy the legal right of self-determination for individual cities and other jurisdictions. We support the stand Mayor Fuller has taken on SB 1042, and it's signed by three of our four counselors. The reason the fourth one is not on there is we could not get in touch with him over the holiday weekend.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Fuller. Now let's hear from others in the panel, and then we'll open up for questions. Mayor Tolliver.
Chair McPherson and members of the House Judiciary Committee, my name is Paul Tolliver. I'm mayor of Troutdale. I've been for 14 years. And I speak here against 1042A and all of the amendments that are attached to it. Senate Bill 1042 was okay because that gave the people of Wood Village the right to vote on this issue. Because it's a Wood Village local issue, in my opinion. I'm opposed to the casino. Have been, have stated it publicly many, many times. The majority of the Troutdale City Council is opposed to the casino. However, we are sticklers for process. And even though the end is being in opposition to the casino, that this means is wrong. It's bad public policy. We feel that local control is paramount, and it's something that cities have to jealously hold on to, because otherwise we won't be cities anymore. We'll just let the legislature decide of all our issues. Or we'll let the House District or the Senate District decide all our issues, or Multnomah County. And in Multnomah County's case, then the city of Portland rules, because that's where all the votes are. So local control and home rule are very important to those of us in Troutdale. We also are aware of the IGA that exists between Gresham Wood Village and Fairview. That should take care of all the issues they've got among them. That's how it should be handled. Let the cities take care of it among themselves and not bring it to the state for determination of local issues. What happens is, and what could very well happen, is we'll end up cannibalizing each other in the East Multnomah County area. The city of Troutdale, if we're lucky, we might have a FedEx regional ground distribution center, which would bring a lot of traffic into our area. We have 200 truck drivers. I've got 700 other employees. It's going to be a big boon for the city of Troutdale. But if this type of thinking prevails, well, then maybe we should have maybe Gresham or Fairview or Wood Village could come and say we need legislation to allow us to vote on a local Troutdale issue. We don't think that's good public policy. There has to be a constitutional amendment for a non-tribal casino to exist anyway in the state of Oregon. That's a statewide issue. It seemed to me that other than the voters of Wood Village, that a non-tribal casino is a matter of statewide interest. All the people in the state should probably vote on that too, as well as the constitutional issue, the legislative issue as well. Statutory issue. I attend the University of Oregon School of Law, and our professors at the School of Law used to hammer into our head, hard cases make bad law. This is a hard case. I don't want the casino. I don't want to see that happen. But it's a bad law to stop it this way. Intergovernmental agreements, statewide votes, whatever is appropriate, but let's not have jurisdictions trumping each other out there by way of development, economic development, or any other way. We need to get along. This is not a good way for us to get along. So I ask you to either not hold a hearing on this or to vote no on this 1042 and all of its amendments, whether it be Senate district, House district, county, four cities voting on it. The only thing about 1042 that makes sense to me is for the Wood Village folks to vote on it, and that was the original bill. Otherwise, it's a matter of statewide issue. Thank you very much for your courtesy.
Thank you, Mayor Tolliver. Next.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Condit. I'm an attorney at Miller Nash LLP. I'm the city attorney for the city of Wood Village. I would like to, and I'm testifying on their behalf, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the technical points. First, I think that there's a question, the first question that the committee should ask itself is, is this bill the right answer to the problem, and second, will it work? As was mentioned previously, in order for this to be even become a problem, the proponents of the casino measure have to get it on the ballot and have to convince the voters to amend the Constitution and to change the state law to provide for off-reservation casinos at this location. The debate over whether that's a good idea or not is almost certainly going to be happen as a result of that election campaign, and it's a healthy debate, and it's one the voters should have, and the voters will decide whether that's a good idea. So the question is this bill, which would apply after that happen, a good idea? First, because the election on the ballot measures would not occur until November 2008, if this committee actually passes this measure and it goes out and gets signed by the governor, there's plenty of time for the proponents of the measure to amend their provision to preempt themselves from this bill. So there's a question in my mind of whether it's even going to work in that case. Second, it's bad public policy for the reasons that Mayor Fuller and Mayor Tolhoffer have talked about. It opens the door to votes of multiple jurisdictions on disfavored land uses. And I think if you open that door, you're going to see that precedent be set, and you're going to have other jurisdictions coming in to ask about vote on other disfavored land uses. A good example, for example, Bridgeport Village and at Tualatin, it's on the boundaries of Tualatin and Tigard and Lake Oswego. Should all of those cities have voted on that? I mean, that is a high-impact use, the same as a casino would be. And I think you're going to open the door to that kind of argument, and I think as Mayor Tolhoffer testified, that's going to start pitting cities against cities, and it would be a very bad precedent for the legislature to start. Second, the existing process, and I think this is my final comment, the existing process works. Under the current land use system, each city and county has primary land use authority within its jurisdiction, but any amendment or siting requirement also requires coordination with the surrounding affected entities, and that includes surrounding cities, and it includes ODOT, it includes anybody who is affected by that decision. There's no doubt that if the voters approve this casino measure, that the proposed casino that the proponents have say they're going to build is going to have tremendous impacts on infrastructure, on police, on neighbors. But those infrastructure impacts are really no different than any other large-scale use, and the land use process requires those to be addressed as part of the process and provides a public hearing opportunity and right to appeal for those people who do not believe that the local jurisdiction has done the job. So there's an existing process in place to deal with those impacts. It's an effective process, and I think it would work in this case. And the proof in the pudding is, as Mayor Fuller mentioned, 10 years ago when there were proposals for developing the Wood Village Town Center, Gresham and Fairview were concerned that it was going to allow too much commercial development on that site in a way that might harm the development of Fairview Village or Gresham Station downtown. They did file an appeal, and it ended up as a result of an intergovernmental agreement between the three cities that limited development, and that intergovernmental agreement is in place as of today. So there's a process that works. And finally, from Wood Village's perspective, Wood Village is the smallest of the East County cities. It has 4,000 people, roughly, 3,500. Anyway, you cut this, our neighbors are going to be making the decision about siting this in our community because we're the smallest city, we have the lowest number of voters. However you cut the dash amendments, whether that's countywide, district-wide, Senate district-wide, or adjacent cities, it effectively gives veto authority to our neighbors for land use in our jurisdiction. So for this reason, I think it's a problem, or it's a solution in search of a problem, number one. It's a solution that, if you pass it, can be drafted around by the proponents, number two, and it opens the door to potential arguments for this body in the future to start allowing votes on large-scale shopping centers, prisons, Walmarts, you name the disfavored land use, and there are many out there. And we don't think that's a public policy door that the legislature should open. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Conda. I wonder if you can refresh my memory. The proposal that was going to go to the ballot here last year included a constitutional amendment and, I think, a separate measure that would have cited a casino on, I think, this property. And could you refresh me on just what that mechanism was that was being proposed to the people of the whole state of Oregon?
Yes, Mr. Chair, you're correct. It was proposed as two measures, and the first measure was a constitutional amendment, and that constitutional amendment would have changed the current constitutional provision prohibiting casinos and would have actually required the legislature to cite one off-reservation casino. That's the constitutional amendment. And then the second proposed initiative was a statutory amendment, which would actually have cited it at this location, provided the establishment of a committee that would adopt administrative rules to regulate it, split revenues, did a whole bunch of other things. And I think the other important point for this committee to realize is that the legislature and the voters are co-equal under the Constitution. If you adopt this measure, the voters can repeal that, and the drafters of the initiative can change their initiative to do that because it's a statutory amendment. Similarly, if these two ballot measures pass as drafted, the legislature has the authority then to take a look at the legislative package that was passed by the voters, and you can amend that package if there's something in there that needs to be fixed. And as Mayor Fuller said, the council has been adamant when it's discussed this issue that the proponents, they would only support they would only consider or not oppose a casino measure if, in fact, all of our land use authority to regulate the impacts was retained. And, of course, they can redraft this initiative, and we may be talking about a totally different initiative by the time it gets on the ballot. But that is, I think, the city's core feeling that would be there. And if that were changed...
If I could just break in what I was leading on to the follow-on question, which is you're criticizing Senate Bill 1042 on the ground that it was poor land use policy to be using a mechanism like a vote of a city and adjacent cities to site a major facility like a casino. So, but could you comment then on the propriety or desirability of the mechanism that was slated to go to the ballot, would have gone to the ballot if the ballot title issues had been resolved, of having all the people of Oregon deciding on the siting of a casino at the dog track?
I think that's an issue that the voters would have to decide, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to comment on how I would deal with that in my personal vote on it, but that's certainly an argument that would be had during the election process on that measure.
Any further questions?
I don't know how far along the development of the dog track is, but these people, if they got to the point now that if we change this ruling, change the law, how this is affected, would they have a Major 37 claim saying we were invested here and now you've changed the rules on us after we've already invested?
I guess potentially under Major 37 as it currently is written, they might have a Major 37 claim. There's a whole bunch of arguments under Measure 37. It's a very unclear measure. Would be an issue in my mind about whether this would be a land use regulation if you pass it. It would be subject to Measure 37, but certainly that argument could be made.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick clarification for Mayor Fuller and Mr. Condit. Do you also oppose the original bill before it was amended in the Senate, and do you oppose all of the amendments that would change from cities to county, House District, or Senate District?
Well, my fight primarily is against outside control of our city. Okay, we've seen that happen. We saw it happen several years ago. And being the smallest city and actually having three small cities with bigger cities around us, if the home rule is violated in this case, we're concerned about maybe being violated in who knows what case, all the things that Mayor Tolliver talked about. We didn't really get involved with the original one. Do we have a position on it? I would rather that I talk to my council before that, but anything that beyond Wood Village voting on it, we would be opposed to.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair.
Mayor Tolliver.
Can I add something just very quickly?
If it could be fairly brief, Mayor.
Yes, sir, this will be brief, yeah.
Okay.
The original constitutional amendment and the original bill, if left to do the job it was intended to do, without 1042 and all of its amendments, the constitutional provision has to be voted on by all the people in Ori. The statutory provision, I think, should be as a matter of public policy because that's non-tribal casino gambling. Now, this applies to the whole state of Oregon. So it's appropriate that legislation be statewide. Now, parceling up among jurisdictions and so on clearly is contrary to that.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor, and gentlemen, all three of you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Justin Martin.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin, and I am here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where I am also a tribal member. I'm also proud to be here today as the Association Manager for the Oregon Tribal Gaming Alliance. Thank you very much for this opportunity to share the tribal perspective in this debate today. We are here to urge your support of Senate Bill 1042 as amended, the engrossed version that came across from the Senate side. It is time for the legislature to send a message to out-of-state investors who feel that they can come and take a gamble in Oregon, spend millions of dollars under the guise that what they offer is good for the citizens of this state, and look to shift the delicate balance that we currently have in the state of Oregon when it comes to gaming. When I talk about delicate balance, I talk about the nine tribal casinos that are in Oregon and the Oregon Lottery. We really need to step back and look at this issue. This bill is not about land use. This bill is not about siting a prison or a water sewage treatment plant. This bill is not about a Walmart. This bill is not about setting a bad precedent. It's not about setting bad public policy. It's about sending a message, again, to out-of-state investors that Oregon and Oregonians are not ready for a private casino. Let's remember, what we're talking about, what we're discussing here in the what-if context, is a constitutionally prohibited activity. We need to set the bar high to deter these out-of-state interests and investors from coming to our great state of Oregon, turning it into Las Vegas, and essentially taking dollars from vital programs, both at the state level and at the tribal level, just to line their own pockets. I'd like to share a few facts about gaming in Oregon, and then close very briefly, Mr. Chair. This proposal would create 7,000 jobs. That, in scale, is four times what Spirit Mountain Casino, the largest casino in Oregon, currently has. So we're looking at a major, major facility. There was a quote in some of the testimony that you guys have before you, and I'd like to address that, talking about Senate Bill 1042 being a thinly veiled attempt by special interests to block development in the Wood Village area. First of all, I'd like to address that in three ways. First of all, what we have seen from the proponents of this massive casino is that there has been no disclosure on who is financially backing that. And with all due respect, I'm sure the gentlemen from Lake Oswego are very well to do, but we are certainly looking at a major investment here, one that we feel is probably from an out-of-state investor. Two, and I think most importantly, tribes are not special interests. Tribes are sovereign governments. There are 9 federally recognized tribes here in Oregon, and they should be treated as such. As a matter of fact, a lot of you on this committee worked very hard to pass landmark legislation in 2001, Senate Bill 770, which requires government-to-government process between state and tribal agencies. We're very proud of that. We're very proud of Oregon's history in terms of government-to-government relationships. Finally, in terms of being thinly veiled, there are severe economic impacts here. We certainly don't hide behind that. The impact to Grand Ronde would be measurable. We have seen that in economic studies looking at a casino further north, 16 miles north in Washington, a potential off-reservation facility. Those impacts are large. There are also financial impacts in terms of what will it take to go out and deal with an initiative campaign, one that's already certified for the 2008 ballot. It will take a great deal of resources that should be spent in tribal programs. And those are programs that are doing a lot of good throughout our state, dealing with health, education, housing, elder pensions, drug and alcohol abuse, and vocational rehabilitation in rural areas. In looking at what could happen from this situation and allowing the first private casino here in Oregon, it could have a devastating impact, not just on Grand Ronde, the closest casino to a metropolitan area at about 90 minutes away, but throughout the state. Certainly if we open the door for one group, what next? The threat of off-reservation will be used in terms of, let's look at, well, there's going to be a casino in Cowlitz, or well, there's going to be a casino in Cascade Locks. Fortunately, even though there have been 3 formal attempts at an off-reservation facility here in Oregon, and we're looking at one in Washington, the reality is, after 20 years of the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, less than a handful of off-reservation facilities have been approved. In doing a great deal of public opinion research, we have seen Oregonians say time and time again over the past 10 years, when asked, are there the right amount of gambling opportunities or too few gambling opportunities, a plurality of those voters say, 46% of them say, we've got just the right amount, while over one-third say that there are too many. And just 1 in 10, approximately 11%, believes that are too few. We also need to look at the impacts of this what-if facility on our Oregon Lottery, which provides almost 70 cents on the dollar towards programs going towards education, economic development, as well as parks and salmon. Why on earth would Oregonians want to take 70 cents off the dollar, get rid of that on a facility that would impact their market to only get 25 cents back? Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the bottom line is that Oregonians are not clamoring for more gambling opportunities. Senate Bill 1042 ensures that private interests and out-of-state investors cannot just come into Oregon, change our Constitution, and site a casino wherever they want. Let's send this strong message. It should be extremely difficult to change the Constitution, and it should be difficult in a sense that tribes have to go through the same processes to establish both community relations and facilities in their communities. Let's make sure that out-of-state interests have to do that as well. Thank you very much, and we urge your support of Senate Bill 1042.
Any questions for Mr. Martin? Not. Thank you, Mr. Martin. I'm going to bring up a panel of 2 now, Richard Goheen and Bill Pronovost. Mr. Goheen.
Thank you, Chair McPherson. Thank you, Chair McPherson. Committee members, thank you for the opportunity to be here today to testify on this very important quality of life bill that is before you. My name is Richard Goheen, I'm a resident of the Fairview area since 1962. I'm here today to give testimony in support of 1042A as amended. Since becoming a Fairview resident, I've had the opportunity to watch the city grow and become a vibrant residential community with land use considerations that have resulted in developments such as Fairview Village. The citizens of Fairview are proud of their city, its warm, hospitable atmosphere. The cities of Fairview, Wood Village, Gresham, and Troutdale are somewhat unique in that, almost without exception, they share a boundary with each other. Therefore, the decisions that are made by any one city, as far as something that affects quality of life, affect all of the cities involved. The city of Wood Village, as you're aware, is being considered by developers as a potential site for a large casino and entertainment complex. I've heard figures here today of a complex that would employ 7,000 people in a city that Mayor Fuller indicates has approximately 4,000 residents. City of Fairview has approximately 10,000 residents. So if you put 10,000 and 4,000, it's 14,000 people just between Fairview and Wood Village. And now you're going to bring in another 7,000 employees, because I assure you that the people that live in Wood Village and Fairview are currently employed. The proposed Wood Village development would adversely affect the character of the adjoining Fairview residential neighborhood that's been built up over the years. Major changes in traffic volume and flow resulting from such a complex would require commensurate changes in street design and signaling. Such changes would affect citizens of all cities adjacent to Wood Village. Insufficient through streets would push traffic into local streets not designed to handle intense 24-hour usage. If a dramatic change in the environment is to take place, like the one proposed, the citizens of the adjacent cities should have the opportunity to make their wishes heard. Senate Bill 1042A, as amended, would give the affected citizens in adjoining areas such an opportunity. I urge you to approve this bill with amendments. It's important that the concerns of citizens of adjoining communities be given consideration if their life and living style is to be altered by this imposition. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Goheen. The sign-up list had you marked as against, but I guess it's against the project, not against the bill.
I'm not against the bill, obviously.
Very good. So let me open it for questions for you now. Thank you, Mr. Goheen. Mr. Pronovost.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Committee. Thank you for allowing me this morning to come and speak in front of you. My name is Bill Pronovost with United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 555. The message that I'm here to deliver is a very simple one, and that is that we need to continue to allow family wage jobs in Oregon. Oregon is struggling to provide jobs, family wage jobs, and we need to allow people and communities to have those jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pronovost. There are no questions. We'll excuse you, gentlemen. Linda Ludwig from the League of Oregon Cities.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Linda Ludwig from the League of Oregon Cities. I've heard my name mentioned in our organization a couple of times this morning, and let me be clear that the League doesn't have a position on the merits of whether a private casino should be allowed in the state or not. We do have some concerns, however, which we believe could be precedential involved in actually an election that involves the siting of any type of project. There may have been some confusion about our position because our board of directors have talked and discussed whether or not we could be potentially neutral if there had been amendment that was being considered by the committee on the bill that involved an election of the local or regional election of the activity rather than the siting of this development. Again, our concerns are regarding opening the can of worms, starting an election for the siting of a development within any of our communities. Again, we are here. The bill is concerned with statewide legislation, and looking at the activity, although that amendment hasn't been drafted by the League, we believed it had been drafted, but not been brought forward to you today, seemed to make more sense in terms of that statewide legislation.
Ms. Ludwig, I need to probe that a bit so I understand. Are you saying that a requirement of local approval for the activity of a gaming and entertainment complex would, as opposed to the siting of the physical structures, is that what you're getting at?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is what I'm getting at, and that has been the conversation with our board of directors. Looking again at the social economic impacts of the siting, of the activity of a private casino locally or regionally versus the siting of a development locally or regionally.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Ludwig? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Last two witnesses, bring up as a panel of two, Doug Riggs and Ted Blazin, I think. I may be murdering that name.
Blazin.
Blazin?
My name is Ted Blazak.
Blazak.
Yes, sir.
Got it.
Chair and honored representatives, thank you for holding these hearings today. My name is Ted Blazak, and I'll be brief. I hope you will consider voting in opposition to this bill. I think a very good reason to vote against this bill is because it is not really a bill, in my view, about neighboring towns having control over the businesses allowed to operate in their vicinity. In my view, it's really about circumnavigating the initiative process. It's about creating additional hurdles for petition initiatives 35, 36, 37, 38. It's about putting this initiative on its own separate track apart from any other initiative filed. It's about strangling a ballot measure campaign before it gets off the ground, something I have never seen or heard of in Oregon politics before. What I fear is about to happen is that you perhaps will strip away access to the initiative process for one very particular group. I personally think this casino would be a good thing. In La Center, Washington, there will soon be a very large posh casino that many Portlanders will visit, and they will take their tourist and gaming dollars there and fill the state coffers of our neighbors to the north rather than our own. But whether or not a majority of Oregonians agrees with me, we may never know, because this legislation creates a structural veto over Oregon's initiative system. And regardless of whether or not this body has valid reasons to deem that a gaming facility in Wood Village is undesirable, the subversion of our democratic process to stop that project, quite frankly, I think is the wrong way to channel such opposition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blazak. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Blazak, can you provide us some more information about a large casino in La Center, Washington? What are you talking about there?
Today, my family, we're moving into Milwaukee, but for the last 2 years, we've lived in Washougal, Washington, and every day I read a newspaper about the big casino that's opening up in La Center. I really don't know any of the details except that it's apparently it's going to be rather large. And
I'm sorry. That's really all I know from what I've read in the newspapers.
Follow up with me.
Go ahead.
Is it a private casino or is it a tribal casino?
Again, I'm sorry. I don't know. All I've known is what I've read in the Colombian Times or that a very large casino is going, much larger than the current card rooms that are there now.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I know you're pressed for time. For the record, I'm Doug Riggs. I'm here representing the two Lake Oswego residents, not out-of-state investors, but the Lake Oswego residents, longtime Lake Oswego residents, who suggested this project. They are not big out-of-state investors. They are not greedy. They have worked very closely with the community, and I have materials that I can share with you going back to 2004 about the multiple, numerous meetings that they've had with the local government, the state government, members of the legislature. They've signed a project labor agreement with 18 members of the Columbia Pacific Building Trades Council. This has been a very open process. There's nothing behind the scenes about this, and I wanted to clarify what Mr. Martin said, that these are somehow greedy out-of-state investors who want to swoop in and change the Constitution. I remind the committee that the Constitution cannot be changed unless the voters of Oregon say they want to change the Constitution. Mr. Martin made the point that only 11% in their polls said that they supported additional non-tribal casinos. Well, if that's the case, then why does he have to worry about passing a bill in this legislature? If they're really so certain that Oregonians will not endorse this concept, then they'll vote it down. So that's one point I wanted to make. Second point I wanted to make, and it's in my packet, I think this letter from Daryl Cornelius, who's a former counselor from Fairview, makes a very important point. In the second paragraph, he notes that Wood Village has not sought to interfere with Fairview's effort to develop their 95-acre industrial facility. They have not come to the legislature and asked for authority to have a vote in Wood Village on what happens right next door in Fairview. And the second thing I'd like to point out is that in the third paragraph, he points out that the City of Fairview City Council itself has not taken a position on this issue. So what you have before you today is the mayor of Fairview, who's asking you to take a position on a bill that the Fairview City Council has not taken a position on, the Troutdale City Council has not taken a position on, and the Gresham City Council has not taken a position on. I would argue that at the very least, they ought to put the horse before the cart, and that if it's so important to each of those individual communities, those councils should be on record supporting Senate Bill 1042A. And what you have before here today is Mayor Tolliver and Mayor Fuller and the entire Wood Village City Council. The Troutdale City Council had a discussion on this and decided not to take a position. So I think we're putting the cart before the horse with this bill. Actually two points. First of all, I wanted to correct the record. It's not 10,000 jobs that will be full-time. So the impacts are not 10,000 jobs coming in and out of the site. It's 3,000 permanent jobs plus about 3,000 to 3,500 construction jobs. Those will not run concurrent. And then the last point that I want to make, I think is important to make, there has been some suggestion that maybe the original Senate Bill 1042 as introduced would be a more appropriate vehicle, requiring just a vote in the city of Wood Village. And I guess this gets back to my main point in this whole issue, which is there is an existing statewide initiative process and a land use process. And the ballot measure, which I have provided copies of for you, states very clearly that nothing in either the statutory or the constitutional ballot measure overturns the existing land use process. And if the citizens of Wood Village want to hold a vote, they will pressure the city council to put it on the ballot, and the city council of Wood Village will put something on the ballot, and the citizens of Wood Village will be able to vote. There is no need for legislature to reinvent the wheel and provide to them an opportunity that already exists under Oregon statute. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, we believe that this is very bad precedent from a statewide perspective. We believe it's bad policy. I appreciate the lengthy amount of time the committee has given this, and we'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Are there questions for Mr. Riggs? Mr. Riggs, I'm going to put the question to you that I did to Mr. Condit earlier, which is that, as I understand the way those initiatives have been paired up, one of them would cite this facility at this particular location and ask all the citizens of Oregon to make that decision. And just explain to me why it's bad policy to allow the people who are more directly affected in a locality to have a vote, but it's appropriate to have every Oregonian having a vote on the siting issue, quite aside from the question of whether we should have private casinos in Oregon.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you raising that question because it's one of the points I wanted to make and forgot to make. I think there's a little misunderstanding about what the statutory measure would do. The constitutional measure simply overturns the constitutional prohibition on a non-Indian casino in Oregon and allows one additional casino. The statutory provision has been referred to as supersiting. Now, supersiting to me suggests that the voters will say it will be here and that's the end of the story. All the statutory measure does is say if it's going to be here, if it passes the land use process and is approved by the City of Wood Village and by Multnomah County and by DLCD and LCDC and LUBA and the Court of Appeals, then this is the location where it could be. It does not supersede it and overturn local land use provisions. And there's a very clear reason for that. The polling that was done early on in the process back in 2004 and 2005 indicated that Oregonians wanted to know exactly what it is they were being asked to vote on. They don't want an amorphous ballot measure put before them saying, you may put a casino in one of, you know, a number of locations. They want to know exactly what they're voting on. So this site exists. It's been used for 50 years for pari-mutuel gambling. It has been used for industrial purposes. It's zoned industrial. And the voters clearly said in all the polls that we saw early on, they wanted to know where the site would be. But that does not overturn, as Mr. Condit testified earlier, the existing land use process, the ability of local communities to get involved through an IGA, to appeal it to LUBA, to appeal it to Court of Appeals, et cetera. The existing land use process would continue under the statutory measure.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Riggs. Any questions? Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'll excuse this panel, and that concludes our testimony on Senate Bill 1042A. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1042A. I will not bring it to work session today. Obviously, there are some significant issues raised by this legislation. We will roll the work session over until tomorrow, but because we are fast running out of time, committee, it will not be long before we'll be faced with decisions on this bill. But we will roll the work session on Senate Bill 1042 until tomorrow, the 30th.
Mr. Chair? It'd be handy to have the Dash 5 amendments just so that we have I don't think we received those, and there was some discussion about them, just to have them.
Yes. Okay. We will distribute the Dash 5 amendments. Thank you very much. Returning to our agenda, the work session on Senate Bill 279 will be rolled over until tomorrow as well. And as I announced earlier, the work sessions on Senate Bills 347, 629, and 273 will be rolled over until tomorrow. And so we will now go to 119. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 119A. This was a bill, committee, that you may recall we heard just very briefly, and so we had rather limited time to for the public hearing. But we do have Mr. Boss from the Department of Justice back, and I'm sure he could elaborate further than the very limited time we had available for him last week. But, Council, why don't you remind us first about the bill, and then we'll see where we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 119A would establish that the Attorney General may investigate and enforce violations of the Oregon securities laws. It would require notice to the Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services and consent in certain instances, and it would permit fines up to $20,000 for each violation, plus awards of attorney's fees, damages, restitution, and disgorgement of legal profits, and appointment of a receiver.
Committee, we heard just very briefly from Mr. Boss. Do people need to hear more detail about this proposal before we would take action on it? Representative Krieger.
Question, Mr. Chair. Do we have any information what other states are doing as far as the fines and those types of things? Is this kind of the norm? These type of violations, how other states handle those, do you know?
Thank you, Representative Krieger. I don't know I know in other states the Attorney General has the authority to investigate these types of violations. What I don't know is the types of fines that can be awarded. I wouldn't be surprised if these types of remedies generally are available, things like disgorgement of profits and restitution. Perhaps Mr. Boss we have more information.
Let's have Mr. Boss come forward and explain that $20,000 item.
Thank you, Chair McPherson, Representative Krieger. Quite honestly, I have no knowledge of what other states, the amount that they fine. I believe what we did, though, was as far as the fines, duplicate what the existing fine structure was for the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Mr. Boss, the thrust of the bill is to give the Department of Justice and the Attorney General authority to enforce the securities laws. The $20,000 item, is it setting what the fine for a violation will be in this bill, or are there potentially higher fines and we're just giving some limited authority to act to the Department of Justice? How does the fine amount relate to the authorizing aspect?
It is, Chairman McPherson, is setting a maximum as far as violations if there is found to be a violation of the Oregon securities laws. So it is up to $20,000 with no more than a cumulative $20,000 per violation and a cumulative of $100,000. That's for the fine element. As counsel stated, there could be a disgorgement of profits and other monetary remedies that the Attorney General could enforce, including a receivership and other type of things. So, quite honestly, it's very narrow. The main regulator of the Oregon securities laws is the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And through the years, the Department of Justice has worked very closely with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. A few years ago, when we were investigating Enron, we discovered that even though Enron was an Oregon corporation, neither of our agencies had the ability to investigate the activities of Enron because we didn't have any authority. So that was one element that we wanted to grant the Attorney General the authority to investigate and perhaps prosecute fraud violations in that area. And then also to leverage the state resources in areas where we are already investigating under the UTPA, for example, like pyramid schemes. These can also be securities violations that we could offer alert the Department of Consumer and Business Services, offer to turn over the investigation to them or to work with them or to do it on our own so we can leverage the state resources.
Okay.
Questions, Mr. Chair?
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you. Mr. Foss, I have several summary sheets, and I wish I would ask you to date those in the future because they don't seem to be dated. One of them says that there's technical amendments are pending. Has that already been done?
Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnett, they have already been done. That is
the follow-on, Mr. Chair. Okay, I'm looking at the A. N. Gross Senate Bill 119. That's what we're looking at. In the summary, it says exempt certain companies licensed by the director. And I guess you're talking director of Department of Consumer and Business Services. Why are we exempting someone, and who are those?
Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnett, what the amendment did was that there are certain the securities and the businesses that are licensed by the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The Attorney General can only investigate or prosecute with the permission of the director of DCBS. The original bill had that type of provision only when the Attorney General was investigating in another area, but allowed the Attorney General to investigate and to prosecute for nationally registered companies. And the director or DCBS does not generally register or regulate nationally registered companies. However, there are certain areas in which they do regulate. So we the original bill was overbroad. We narrowed it down so to allow those nationally registered companies, which the DCBS does regulate, that the Attorney General could only investigate or do anything in that area with the permission of DCBS.
Follow on, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. I was ready to vote for the bill, but now you're saying because I wanted to go after companies like Enron that have destroyed our system and a lot of people's lives, but now you're saying they're exempt.
Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnett, they are not exempt. Enron is a company that is not regulated by any Oregon entity at the present time, and they would not be exempt from this bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Okay. I thought you tried to explain to me that it's only the companies that are regulated by the Oregon Business and Consumers Directory. And Enron was an international company.
Correct. Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnett. The element that the amendment dealt with was only a matter of permission from the director of DCBS. So the area, this grants the Attorney General authority to investigate nationally registered companies. The DCBS does not have the authority to regulate in that area. Then, so the Attorney General will be able to go in and enforce the state securities laws in that area. There is a certain.
Well, let me see if I understand, Mr. Chair. Then, so you're saying the director of the Department of Consumer Business Services is going to do whatever they do to local Oregon companies, but this is going to give the Attorney General to go after companies that that director does not have authority to? Is that what we're saying?
Representative Pearson, Representative Wisnett, yes.
All right. Okay. Thank you. I'll vote.
Any further questions for Mr. Boss? Well, if not, then we are in work session, and we have Senate Bill 119A before us. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 119A to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Barker moves Senate Bill 119A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Moore?
Aye.
Representative Call?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair
McCullough? Aye. Senate Bill 119A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We have a volunteer to carry it. Representative Bonamici, thank you very much. Close the work session on Senate Bill 119A and open a work session on Senate Bill 248A. Council Cummins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 248A, as bill this committee heard on Friday concerning non-competition agreements, a work group was formed to discuss this bill, and there are some consensus amendments that are before the committee. I think some hand-engrossed versions of the A4s were just passed out to you. And I think maybe one of the proponents would like to walk the committee through the what the work group has agreed to and maybe describe who is on the work group as well.
Just self-select here, representatives of the work group.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And we actually have had a very good work group that's worked very well together and done some very good, rather quick work on this bill. As you remember, the original concept was that of being laid off. We moved completely away from that and said you have to fall under certain criteria in order to have a non-compete clause. One, you have to be part of the non-exempt section of the white-collar exemption, executive, managerial, or supervisory. Basically, what that is it'll tell you that you have to be someone who supervises people, you have independent thinking, and so it's not your average worker. It's not the person who changes tires or
maids or other examples I've used before the committee before. The second thing is that you have to have a protectable interest. A protectable interest would be access to trade secrets or, and the language here is on page 2 of your hand and gross bill that should be before you, where it says you also have to have including product development plans, product launch plans, marketing strategy, or sales plans. There are a couple of minor changes we need to make to the bill. We'll have to take to LC. On line 25, for instance, it should say and instead of or. The third piece is that you have to be in a job where your gross annual salary is larger than the average median income for a family of four in Oregon, which currently is right at $62,000 a year. So you have to meet all three of those criteria. And it also further says in the bill that the non-competition agreements are only enforced for 2 years maximum. And you can get out of those other sections if, in fact, you pay 50% of someone's base salary for the two-year term of the non-compete, or for whatever term up to 2 years your non-compete's in force.
Good. I'm Julia Brim-Edwards, Nike State and Public Affairs Director, and I just want to echo Commissioner Gardner's comments. It was a productive work group. I think we got to the two issues of notification and the proliferation of non-competes in a way that allows businesses that have a legitimate use of non-competes to continue that practice. And setting down some parameters under which those non-competes could be enforced. So from our standpoint, we're supportive of the amendments and feel like they reflect, in the hand and gross version, the intent of the work group.
Chair McPherson, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Esselman of Tonkin Torp, representing the Software Association of Oregon. I would have nothing to add on the policy side of this. If it's helpful, I can walk you through the hand and gross changes that we just made this morning as a work group, if those require explanation. If not, I can.
I think it may be helpful just to reiterate what has already been said here, but I think it's important for the committee to understand that as the bill came to us, a major feature of it was to void non-compete agreements based on the circumstances under which an employee left, that is, layoff or whether there was cause or not for the termination. And I'd have to say from my own experience in this area of activity, it becomes rather difficult sometimes to determine what the circumstances were, and a lot of finger-pointing back and forth once a relationship is broken down. And what the amendments to this bill, as developed by the work group, would do is focus entirely on the protectable interest and the stature, the position that the employee is being hired into. So it's a front-end kind of look at when a non-compete is appropriate, as opposed to a back-end look at the end of the employment relationship. And I should throw that out as a generalization and would invite any comments that the panel has if they want to add anything to that point.
I think, Mr. Chair, if I could, the one thing I'd add to that is that the real thrust of the whole focus on having a bill, whether it's on the front end or the back end, is to make sure that these don't proliferate down into hourly people who have no protectable interest whatsoever, to, you know, some of the examples I've been giving you, like a maid who doesn't even have, you know, the knowledge of the formula for the cleaner that she's using. You know, you really want someone who's got that level of knowledge, not someone who is a basic hourly worker or does a normal average everyday job. This has to be a high-level person, and I think that's what we've accomplished through the work group.
Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you, Mr. Gardner, for those comments. So that I just want to make sure you said that, and I haven't read the bill, the amendments. There was three criteria there. Non-exempt was the first one.
Yes.
Are these all ands? In other words, non-exempt and protective secrets?
Yes.
Okay, I understand not protecting or not putting a maid or, in my business, the guy who makes the recipe for the beans in the back of the restaurant. But aren't there situations where, and I'm thinking of a non-exempt class where I might be hired as a scientist who does not, first of all, I think I have to supervise people to become non-exempt, and I could be paid, you know, $100 an hour for my talents and skills, and I might have access to protectable secrets, or I might have access to a marketing strategy, and I might have a salary of greater than $60,000 and be a non-exempt or an hourly employee. So does this take into consideration for that, for a high-tech business that they hire people but they do not supervise people?
Chair McPherson, Representative Cameron, if the commissioner will indulge me, I think I can help respond to that question. I think in what these amendments do not negate in any way are work made for hire type of agreements in the contractual setting where you'd be contracting with a highly compensated employee, perhaps on an hourly basis, but not on a salaried basis. You would still be able to enforce those agreements to protect your trade secrets. Moreover, we have not affected with this bill any of the statutory protection of trade secrets that already exists. So I think we feel, notwithstanding the changes to contractual non-competition rights that this bill creates, we feel adequately protected.
And if there are no further...
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the work on this. And so we're saying now an employee can have a non-compete agreement, but it's only for 2 years. How does that compare to other states as far as 2 years? That's, in certain things, that seems short, in certain areas of trade secrets.
Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnett, we did some research on this. The states that impose statutory restrictions, and there was roughly, I think, 10 of them, were between 2 and 5 years, as low as 1 year in Missouri, or Missouri. Moreover, when we had conversations with the people who enforce these agreements in courts in Oregon, they tell us that at court, it is rare to see a court enforce these provisions beyond 2 years. So we feel that the statutory limitation is consistent with court rulings in the state.
Go ahead. I support Mr. Garner's original intent that the working people that really don't have any trade secrets or anything that's going to hurt the company. The one area that I'm concerned about is the creative. Now, Intel is creative to an extent. Nike's an extent is creative to an extent, too. But I have a friend that owns Dark Horse Comics. So, you know, and people putting out those sort of things, is he going to be happy with this? Is that going to...
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, I believe that, you know, first of all, you have to remember that all trade secrets are protected already. This is saying not only those who have access to trade secrets, but also have access to, you know, creative product line development and all those. Someone with Dark Horse Comics, for instance, if they had knowledge, you know, of a high level, they would, in fact, be able to protect that interest. The other thing that the bill that we haven't mentioned that says in the bill is that we also further protected companies in saying that no employee can go and take a client list from an employer and go solicit those. In other words, if, you know, I was a dentist and I was in partnership with someone else, if, you know, the other party owns the business, I can't go take the client list from the company I work for and solicit those individual patients to try and build my own company should I want to open one up. So it also protects that as well. I'm certainly very supportive of that. I don't believe any employee should solicit a client list of the business they're working for.
Just another note on that point is that if a employee leaves and a company wishes to protect and enforce the non-compete, if they pay them at least up to 50% of their annual gross base salary and the commission, they can enforce the non-compete. So that's another option for companies if they wish to prevent an employee from working for a competitor and enforce a non-compete.
Thank you.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The commissioner may have already answered this, but just for clarification, because I've only had a chance to skim this, after the two-year provision expires, that means the employee can go work somewhere else, but the trade secrets continue to be protected. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, absolutely. Trade secrets are protected forever.
Thank you. Yeah.
We have two more members of the work group who wanted to make comments, so let's excuse these three, Jim Craven and Dave Fiscom.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Craven representing the American Electronics Association. Just brief comments. I think the bill and the Dash 4 amendments with the hand-engrossed further amendments represents a significant improvement over the bill that came over to you from the Senate side. I also understand that that the Senate participants are likely to agree to concur with these amendments if you make them and send the bill back over. So hopefully this will be the end of the road rather than just another step as we're in the concluding weeks of the session. Other than that, I want to just thank the commissioner and all the other members of the work group for digging in. We do this sometimes. It's not unusual this time of session to work in this, and we're still out there hand scribbling in the halls as we speak. But I think we're close to an agreement on this, and I would encourage the committee to move the Dash 4 amendments, or maybe it'll be Dash 5 by tomorrow morning. So.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Dave Fiscom here representing the Oregon Association of Broadcasters. Actually, I wasn't on the work group, which is fine because I have a lot of work groups to be on. I just did see the Dash A4 amendments this morning, and I don't have a particular concern with them, but thought it was important for the record to indicate that in light of the importance of this issue in preserving our ability for non-competes, and I'll describe that in just a brief in a moment. I do need to run this language by our counsel, in particular with regard to the language on page 2, lines 22 through 25. The question for us is, do those words there protect what is the Oregon Association of Broadcasters' main interest, and that is to protect the often substantial investment we make in on-air talent? I don't have a particular concern about the language as I've skimmed it in the last moment otherwise with regard to that particular set of four lines. With your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I'd be pleased to get that answer for you momentarily as well as for the work group. Our interest, again, is protecting primarily the substantial investment we make in on-air talent, typically anchor persons and others. We have a secondary interest in protecting the sales executives and so forth we have who have customer lists and so forth, but I believe that is protected. We were actually okay with the original version of the bill, and we may be okay with this subject to one further check. So thank you.
Okay. One more question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry I haven't had a chance to figure this out yet. Did you address in the work group the issue that was raised by somebody from Hirshner Hunter about the members of the board of directors, or was that taken out? There was a concern raised about they're not employees.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, let me pause, and people from behind, feel free to pop in. I believe that since we've reconstituted the approach to this, we possibly have the compensation issue does occur to me that I'm not sure that all directors are paid at this level. Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, by looking at the new definition, the new approach, first of all, members of the board of directors in 99% of cases, I would imagine, would meet the non-exempt test. I would imagine that they would, in most cases, meet the salary test. They'd have to make more than $62,000 a year, and they certainly would have the knowledge base. Therefore, they would fit into the group that's protectable. And again, if they don't fit into that group that's protectable and the knowledge they have is so valuable that you absolutely must protect it, you can pay them up to 50% of their base salary or no less than 50% of the median income for a family of four, about $31,000 a year, and that would be still protected.
And there's actually, I think, maybe an overriding point, which is that the outside directors, ones that are not also executives with the company, which is common in a larger public company, they're not employees. They are independent contractors as to their director's fees they receive. So they would be outside the bill entirely. So it's only executives who are the so-called inside directors that would be affected by this bill at all, and really the executive position they hold would be the one that would determine the enforceability of the agreement.
I would also add that they would have certain fiduciary duties that would apply regardless of what we put in this bill. So they couldn't just go out and violate those duties and spill secrets.
Very quickly,
were there architects on the work group?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnant, not knowing what everyone represented, I don't believe there were, but I don't believe they had brought it up.
Well, we're not going to pass the bill out, so if anybody has any concern about other perspectives they think should take a look at this bill, we ought to ask them here before tomorrow, because I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 248. But we roll the remainder of it over until tomorrow, Wednesday, the 30th of May, and we'll do the same with Senate Bills 345A and Senate Bill 406A. That is, the work sessions on those bills are rolled over, and as I announced earlier, work sessions on Senate Bill 1042A, 279A, 347A, 629A, and 573A are also rolled over until tomorrow, Wednesday, the 30th. That concludes our meeting. We are adjourned.